VOA News via remote. I'm Diane Roberts. Former U.S. President Donald Trump says he's not talking to investigators in a civil probe of his business dealings. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
More than an hour after arriving at the New York Attorney General's office for a deposition, Trump announced he'd invoked the Fifth Amendment and would not answer questions under oath. The probe involves allegations that Trump's company exaggerated the value of prized assets to mislead lenders and tax authorities. He denies it, calling the investigation an unfounded, politically motivated witch hunt. While he has defended himself in public statements, legal experts said that same strategy could backfire in a deposition, since anything Trump said could be used in a separate criminal investigation by Manhattan's district attorney. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Wednesday's deposition comes 2 days after the FBI searched Trump's private club and residence in Florida. The White House said it would not be appropriate to comment on any ongoing investigation in regard to the search. Trump characterized it as an unannounced raid. Kyiv says Russian planes have been put out of action. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Ukraine's Air Force says 9 warplanes were destroyed in massive explosions at an airbase in Crimea amid speculation they were the result of a Ukrainian attack. That would represent a significant escalation in the war. Russia's denied any aircraft were damaged in Tuesday's blast or that any attack took place. Ukrainian officials have stopped short, though, of publicly claiming responsibility for the explosions while poking fun at Russia's explanation that munitions at the Saki airbase caught fire and blew up. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
This is VOA News. A plane carrying around 300 Afghans who worked for Spain and their families was due to arrive in Madrid from Pakistan Wednesday, 1 year since the Taliban's return to power in Kabul. Foreign Minister José Manuel Álvarez will be on hand to welcome the flight, which is part of the government's efforts to evacuate the staff, which cooperated with the Spanish authorities in Afghanistan, the foreign ministry said in a statement. Like other Western nations, Spain in August 2021 rushed to evacuate Afghans who helped Spanish troops and diplomats as Taliban insurgents made rapid territorial gains across Afghanistan. According to the latest weekly pandemic report released by the World Health Organization, the number of coronavirus deaths fell by 9% in the last week, while new cases remained relatively stable. The UN Health Agency says there were more than 14,000 COVID-19 deaths in the last week and nearly 7 million new infections. The Western Pacific reported a 30% jump in cases, while Africa reported a 46% drop, as has the Americas and the Middle East. WHO says new deaths rose in the Middle East, but were dropping significantly in Africa and less so in Europe and Americas. It, however, cautions the assessment of COVID-19 trends remains compromised by countries dropping many efforts in relaxing pandemic controls. Kenyans were waiting Wednesday for the result of a close presidential election where turnout was lower than usual. The top contenders are longtime opposition leader Raila Odinga, who on his fifth attempt was backed by former rival and outgoing president Uhuru Kenyatta, and deputy president William Ruto, who fell out with the president earlier in their decade in power. Voters have expressed little hope of real change and frustration with rising prices and widespread corruption in East Africa's economic hub. In an AP interview, political analyst Leila Mohammed attributes other sources who say the Kenya vote is very tight.
Whilst IBC itself is yet to make any announcements on the presidential election, independent media entities and others are releasing provisional results, and we can see that this is neck and neck. The figures keep on fluctuating with each and every second.
Giorgia Meloni, leader of the far-right Brothers of Italy, has sought to detoxify the country's post-fascist movement, and in doing so has brought it to within touching distance of power. Meloni has pledged to cut taxes and bureaucracy, raise defense spending, close Italy's borders to protect the country from Islamization, renegotiate European treaties to return more power to Rome, and fight LGBT lobbies. And recapping our top story, Donald Trump says he was not talking to investigators in a civil probe of his business dealings. More than an hour after arriving, he said he would invoke the Fifth Amendment. Via remote, Diane Roberts, VOA News.
The This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the sub-region will be more integrated, more competitive, efficient, and strong enough to compete with the other regions. We have some countries that are stronger in Central Africa. I could push the rest.
That's Charles Asamba Angodo, who heads the unit of a pilot committee created by Central African heads of state to merge two regional trade blocs. Details coming up. Also, more than 800 inmates have escaped from prison in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. We have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said today he's very concerned about a U.N. report that says Rwanda is backing rebels in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. Victoria Munga reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
Concluding a two-day visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said he was disturbed by a U.N. Security Council report showing that Rwanda provided troop reinforcement for M23 rebels in eastern Congo last November. Speaking in Congo's capital, Kinshasa, Blinken vowed to raise the matter during his imminent visit to Rwanda. He called on all parties in the region to stop supporting M23 rebels who are fighting the DRC government in eastern Congo. The group reemerged in November last year after nearly a decade of ceasefire. The Rwandan government has denied assisting M23. The top U.S. diplomat, who is on his second Africa tour, assured Congo of U.S. support, especially in investment, to ensure best practices are upheld. He encouraged the DRC to collaborate and work on fiscal transparency and labor rights for the mining sector. The U.S. pledged $30 million to help the DRC promote responsible and sustainable mining practices and raised concerns about the auction of Congo's oil and gas blocks in sensitive areas. In July, Reuters reported that licensing rights for 30 gas and oil blocks in the DRC were auctioned, opening parts of the world's second largest rainforest to drilling that could release large amounts of carbon into the air and jeopardize efforts to stem global warming. Washington and Kinshasa agreed to form working groups on environmental impacts on oil block auctions. Blinken heads to Rwanda late Wednesday to wrap up his visit to the African continent. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
More than 800 inmates have escaped from prison in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo overnight. Armed men staged the attack overnight in the Beni region of North Kivu province. A military spokesman says two policemen were killed in an assault on the Kakwangura Central Prison in the town of Mutembo by an unidentified Mai group, an ethnic defense organization. But the French news agency AFP says a U.S.-based monitor, the Kivu Security Tracker, suspects the attackers were linked to the Allied Democratic Forces, ADF, a regional affiliate of the Islamic State group. The ADF is one of dozens of violent militias in eastern DRC and has been blamed for thousands of deaths in the region. Central African ministers meeting in Cameroon have agreed to merge two regional blocs in a move to boost trade and growth. The 11-member Economic Community of Central African States will join with the 6-member Economic and Monetary Community of Central Africa. The deal aims to eliminate rivalry that has helped to make Central Africa the poorest region among the continent's economic groups. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Central African economic ministers say they want to foster regional integration, accelerate economic transformation, and facilitate development by merging the two economic blocs. Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Congo, Gabon, Equatorial Guinea, and Chad are members of the Economic and Monetary Community of Central Africa, or CEMAC, while the Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, is made up of all CEMAC member states, plus Angola, Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Rwanda, and Sao Tome and Principe. Charles Asamba Ongodo, heads the unit of a pilot committee created by Central African heads of state to merge CEMAC and ACAS. Ongodo says having one economic bloc instead of two will reduce administrative duplication and associated costs.
The sub-region will be more integrated, more competitive, efficient, and strong enough to compete with the other regions. We have some counties that are stronger in Central Africa. I could push the rest.
ACAS was created in 1983 to reduce inequality and poverty in Central Africa. Central African leaders created CEMAC about a decade later, launching it in 1999 for the same purpose. The African Union reports that free movement of people and goods remains a dream in the majority of Central African states. The absence of a functioning common market, the customs union envisaged by Central African leaders when they created the two structures, has further deepened poverty. Moise Tabwe is one of the pilot committee's consultants. He says the effects of Russia's ongoing war in Ukraine underscore the need for Central Africa to merge its two economic structures and focus on its development.
Nous sommes en train de parler de 269 millions de dollars.
Tabwe says Central African states produce about 5% of pharmaceutical products they need and spend $269 million to import pharmaceutical products from Europe each year, despite their huge potential. He says the overdependency of Central African states on imports is responsible for hardships among civilians caused by scarcity and spiraling food and commodity prices since Russia launched its war in Ukraine in February of this year. Tabwe said most of the region's civilians live on less than a dollar a day, while 40% of the population suffer from hunger in the midst of plenty. He blamed the situation on regional government officials, whom he said consider integration as a threat to each country's sovereignty. Together, ECAS and CEMAC constitute a market of more than 240 million inhabitants and is the least integrated region in Africa, according to the African Union. Cross-border business among Central African states is estimated at less than 5% against a continental average of about 20%. The region lacks developed land, air and sea communication, which constitutes an enormous obstacle to integration. The ministers' meeting in Cameroon on Wednesday said the two blocks will be merged before the end of 2023. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Burkina Faso's army says two explosions killed 15 soldiers yesterday, the latest in a series of attacks as the country battles an extremist insurgency. An army statement says the twin blasts occurred on the road from Bourzanga to Djibo in the center-north region during an escort mission. One of the vehicles in the convoy, which was carrying troops, hit an explosive device near Namsugia district in Bam province. While troops secured the area and tended to the victims, a second device was remotely detonated, causing many casualties. In Burkina Faso, violence blamed on jihadists affiliated to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group has killed thousands of people and prompted 1.9 million more to flee their homes. A recent study by Africa Center for Strategic Studies indicates that French officials have redefined their strategy to fight Islamist militants in the Sahel as thousands of troops complete a withdrawal from Mali, and concerns mount over the growing threat to coastal West African states. Coups in Mali, Chad, and Burkina Faso have weakened France's alliances in its former colonies, emboldened extremists who control large swaths of desert, and opened the door to greater Russian influence. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the center, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi the alternative approach to counter violent groups.
We should be clear that France is pulling out of Mali as a direct result of the Malian junta's pressure on France and the EU to leave. And we're seeing this now with regards to the UN forces as well, with MINUSMA. Again, the junta is acting out of political purposes. It wants to further consolidate its hold on power and not follow through on the promised transition to civilian-led democratic government. This is also consistent with the interest of the junta's international patron, Russia, which is using Mali as a geostrategic sphere of influence to sideline Western influences in Africa. But the result is that Mali is now in a very grave situation where we could see a fragmenting of the country and, you know, unprecedented levels of control by the jihadist. So it's a very dire situation on the security front in Mali, and they don't have any, you know, viable solutions at the moment. Now, for the Sahel more generally, the situation is somewhat better. We're seeing governments, especially in Niger, that are mobilizing their forces. They're ramping up their recruitment, their training. They're adapting their tactics to be more mobile and more capable so that they're better able to confront the irregular nature of the jihadist forces there. You know, they're also increasing their cooperation, both with regional partners, you know, neighboring countries as part of the G5 Sahel coalition, but also with the international partners. So the French troops we were talking about earlier, they are doing more in Niger and in Burkina Faso. We're seeing the same from European Union and other Western countries. So there are, you know, there are actions being taken on the security front to try to boost up other Sahelian countries and the littoral countries that are under threat.
So how important is it for counterinsurgency in the Sahel to complement military action with initiatives to improve living conditions, as well as good governance and building positive relations with local populations so they can weaken support to insurgents?
It's very essential. You know, these are societal conflicts rather than, you know, conflicts involving conventional forces. And so establishing constructive relations with local communities is vital to any successful counterinsurgency operation. And specifically, you know, looking at the history of counterinsurgency, the evidence shows that good governance, legitimacy, reducing corruption, creating jobs, all of these things are associated with successfully defeating insurgencies. It's also important to recognize that insurgencies tend to be long campaigns involving, you know, many years, 6 to 9 years on average. And therefore, it's not just enough to try to put together an integrated package of security and good governance and development, but you have to sustain it over time. And so, you know, building those connections with communities is going to be part and parcel of what is needed to rebuild trust, to rebuild the support with these local communities. And gradually over time, you're able to squeeze out the space in which these insurgent groups are able to operate and eventually grind them down so that they're no longer a threat.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shinawi. Mali's military government has received several fighter jets and helicopters from Russia, which has become a close and controversial ally in its fight against Islamist militants. Annie Rasenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
The aircraft were handed over during a ceremony at Bamako's airport, with Malian President Assimi Goïta and Russian Ambassador Igor Gromyko present. Photos of the aircraft were posted to the official presidential Twitter page, with Russian state media RIA saying the delivery consists of Sukhoi Su-25 fighter jets, L-39 Albatros jets, and attack helicopters. Malian Defense Minister Sadio Camara said in a speech on Malian state TV channel ORTM that an even larger number of aircraft were delivered. Here we are just showing a part of what was delivered, he says. The rest, of course, are being engaged in operations at the moment that the ceremony is being held. Mali has been fighting an Islamist insurgency for the past decade, since Islamists took over northern Mali in 2012. Control of Malian territory was regained after France intervened in 2013, but attacks and fighting have continued in the years since, with 2022 already one of the deadliest years on record in the conflict. In the most recent incident, Islamist fighters attacked a Malian army base in the northern town of Tessit on Sunday, with the army saying in a press release that 17 soldiers and 4 civilians were killed in the attack. Violence has also increased in central and southern Mali. 132 civilians were murdered in a massacre blamed on Islamist militants in June in the central Mopti region, and several attacks have occurred in Mali's southern regions in recent months, with Islamists attacking Mali's main military town, Kati, just 15 kilometers north of Bamako, in July. The French army is in the final stages of withdrawing from Mali after French President Emmanuel Macron announced the withdrawal of forces in February, following increasing tensions with Mali's military government and concerns over Mali working with Russian mercenaries. Mali's military government continually denied claims it works with mercenaries, saying it only works with Russian instructors. Several governments have accused Mali of working with mercenaries from the Wagner Group, a Russian private military company. In March, Human Rights Watch released a report in which several residents of Mora attested to witnessing mercenaries committing extrajudicial killings and human rights abuses with the Malian army over a period of 5 days. Mali also received 2 Russian helicopters in April and 4 helicopters as well as weapons in September of last year. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
The United Nations has painted a grim picture of Sudan's humanitarian situation. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says 11.7 million people face acute hunger between June and September, an increase of nearly 2 million compared with the same period last year. The Associated Press reported that the deepening food crisis in Sudan is caused mainly by the country's fragile economy, prolonged dry spells, reduced areas cultivated, and erratic rainfall. The East African nation also has been plunged into turmoil since a military coup in October that upended the country's short-lived transition to democracy. The military takeover derailed international-backed efforts to overhaul the battered economy and stalled billions in assistance from the West and global financial institutions. The World Food Program also says it was forced to cut rations for refugees across Sudan because of severe funding shortfalls. The UN said its humanitarian response for Sudan in 2022 received $414 million out of a total requirement of $1.94 billion. Kenyans are waiting for the results of a close presidential election. The major presidential contenders, Odinga and Ruto, have said they will accept the results as long as the vote is free and fair. VOA's Africa 54 TV managing editor Vincent McCorry is in Nairobi, closely watching the situation. I asked him what the mood is in Kenya one day after the vote.
In fact, you could say there's a sense of somberness because the way the results are coming in, indeed kind of trickling in, especially at the presidential level, it's not clear up to now who really is poised to win this election. It is too close to call. And when that happens, generally people just get a little tense because it could go either way. And so nobody is about to celebrate at all. And because of that, everybody seems to be just crossing their fingers and just waiting, almost in a somber fashion. The other, you know, elected positions like members of parliament, we have had cases where actually people have considered defeat already because the results for those are announced at the polling center. For those who are vying for member of parliament, they don't have to come all the way to the national tallying center. So there has been celebrations in other parts of the country, kind of sadness for those who have lost. So there are a few cases where it's clear who is the winner, who is the loser. But at the presidential level, I was just in a few minutes ago at the National Tallying Center, and the chairman of the IBC, Mr. Wafula Chebukati, says they have up to 7 days, but they will try to finalize the process within the next 3 days or so. So that is the state of things as we speak today. as far as the presidential election, we're talking about a turnout that was low, lower than usual. That is basically what's happening?
Yes, it was anticipated that the turnout could be perhaps 60% or so, but it looks like it is way lower than that. I think I've seen numbers up to 30 or 32%. So it is extremely disappointing and confusing to most of those who especially participated in the process itself. They're trying to understand why the low turnout, even in the strongholds of those front runners, like what happened? There was an expectation that especially the youth of Kenya may not necessarily turn out in large numbers. They are kind of disenchanted with the politics of the country, but not the rate at which we've seen the numbers. It's just confusing to many, and many are trying to see through all sorts of discourses that are going on to figure out what really happened.
Vincent, now that you're bringing this topic up, there's a very acute economic stagnation going on in the country. And then we see this very extravagant campaign where money was like flowing. Maybe that turned people off?
You know, if you check, you will notice that research has shown that actually Kenya's campaign has been billed as perhaps one of the most expensive in the world. The politicians have spent so much money in even the posters that we are seeing here. You know, traditionally used to see posters that are paper, that are stuck on walls and telephone poles and electric poles. But here we have massive billboards that are, in fact, like one billboard could possibly feed 10 children in some village. The amount of money that has been poured in the campaign is obscenely high. I can't give you the figures right now, but in a later conversation, we probably can talk about it. But also, yeah, that display of the money that is being just poured out there is a lot. But that has also led people to believe that it's the exact reason why politicians, once they get into the elected position, engage in corruption. They want to recoup that money and then make more money. They end up not engaging in, serving the citizens in the coming years, but rather first trying to make up for the money that they lost, the money they spent, and of course, try to get as wealthy as possible for in readiness for the next election, because they understand now how expensive it is. How do you run for a re-election? You've got to make a lot of money before then.
That was VOA's Africa 54 TV managing editor Vincent McCorry monitoring election results. He talked to me from the Kenyan capital in Nairobi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Barrow, and our engineer, John Walker, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and